It's been a little while. I think last time you and I hung out was in Scotland.
Scotland.
Which
yes.
was very Scotland.
Fest.
Which was very
Love
fun.
Scotland.
Great vibes.
I like that.
Great
accent.
Vibes there.
Was that an accent? Did you just do an accent?
Who? Me? No.
I thought one of you did an accent.
I wouldn't dare.
Did I hallucinate a Scottish accent the first
I would not attempt it in a million years.
Okay. That's me.
Well,
that's
they'll find it in the edit,
Monday.
Won't they?
Sylvie's going to do it now.
Yeah.
Sylvie has
yeah.
to
okay.
now.
I didn't do it.
That was solid. Well done.
Hello and welcome to Talking Too Loud with Chris Savage. I am your host, Chris Savage. I am joined by the extraordinary, the thoughtful, antagonistic.
Oh,
Sylvie Lubow, our producer. Here she is.
You're coming for me.
You know, you just look so happy that I felt I had to go in some other direction. So I'm sorry. You're not antagonistic. You're great. I just, you know, it's, I need,
I mean,
I was just
sometimes
looking for,
I am. Sometimes
I was just looking
I
for some kind of reaction. You
I
know
got
me.
It.
Just
I got
trying to get you going.
Just poking the bear.
So we have a great interview today. Joanna Wiebe, who is the founder of Copy Hackers, is here talking about how to write copy that resonates, how to do it in a world where it's like really confusing, what people believe, what they know. This is a very cool one. And it got me, I mean, I'm sure you were noticing during the interview, I kept like looking up, just like thinking of the implications. And we've worked with Joanna in the past, to full disclosure, like many moons ago. And she's really great. But I was like, oh man, should we look at this? Should we look at that? Those interviews I kind of love because it's like I'm actively taking notes totally. While we're doing of things we need to change. And so that's what we have coming in store for you. But first, the show is called Talking Too Loud because when we get excited, we talk too loud. We got that decibel meter going. What's got you talking too loud, Sylvie?
Oh man, I was trying to think. I am trying to think. Okay, so the thing I'm talking too loud about is if you go out on a Friday night and then you get to just like hang at home on a Saturday night, the winning combination for that Saturday night is Chinese food and a movie.
Okay.
Like, there is nothing better. It is pure heaven.
This
in
is
my
what
opinion.
Just happened this weekend?
This is what just happened. I saw a Chromeo show on Friday night.
Oh, wow. That's
that
fun.
Was amazing.
Okay.
But the thing that I'm really talking
but
to
you're
loud
really
about,
talking about sitting at home
is the
and
next
you,
night.
Yes.
Yeah, when you're just like also kind of like the combo of out on Friday, home on Saturday.
It's like, look at like, me. I'm dynamic. I can be out
give
there.
It up
I
for
can be
a,
home.
Give it up yeah. for an, just like a chill.
Chill. Yeah. Keep it chill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep mocking this. just wait. Just wait. Our listeners are going to write in. And they're going to be thanking me for this sage advice.
But the question is, what movie did you watch on Saturday?
Reptile. It's a crime movie, kind of noir style. I really liked it, actually. Okay. You know, sometimes Netflix cranks out some pretty bad originals. So, like, comparatively, I thought this was great. And then in the crime movie genre, I thought this was pretty good. Benicio del Toro.
Oh, he's in there. Okay, cool.
That
That's
brooding
awesome.
Man.
That's yeah. great. You always love a
the Chinese
type.
Food. You know, that's important too. Don't sleep yeah. on that. What's got you talking too loud?
I thought I broke my toe.
That's
and,
it.
And I that's think that the- was it. Yeah. And it was like Thursday night and I was just walking out of my office and I just jammed around a chair and I saw white for a second. You
oh
know,
my
I was
God.
Just like,
the,
my vision
yeah,
went
blinding
white.
Pain.
Yes. And then I did one of those big inhales. I was like, I did
don't
a huge
hurt yourself
inhale.
Again. Don't hurt yourself again.
Yeah. And then Alexandra, my wife, like she heard the inhale and she goes, oh my God, are you okay? And
I was like,
and then, you know, you're at the doctor and there's x-rays and it's not broken. So that's the good news. But it was.
Did you crack your sesamoid bone? Was there anything
Nothing
about
is
your sesamoid?
Fractured.
Okay.
I don't know what the hell that is. I don't know about
it. It's like this chickpea like bone in your toe, which that's how I broke my toe. Cracked
oh yes no they told me nothing was broken just okay. extremely swollen so I've just been like hobbling
just have
around
one big toe
yeah and then basically like I'm hobbling around using all these other muscles I don't normally use so like my shin is sore my calf is sore and I'm just kind of like it's like put me in a bad mood honestly and I was like, the second it happened, I was like, I'm fine. It's just fine. I'm going to live in the moment. It's painful right now. It's painful in this moment. Don't think about the future. I was like trying to use all my tools manage this. And then eventually I was like, this sucks. This is terrible.
Sometimes you just have to feel the pain. You just have to say, I'm mad. This stinks. But you know, toes, it's funny. They all work together. Like teams need to work together around copywriting.
Interesting segue. I like it. Yes. The words need to work. You need to put the problem out there, like the big toe, agitate, like the second toe, whatever that's called. And then you have your copy that's going to convert. Well, look, we don't know what we're talking about, but Joanna Wiebe, who is our guest today, sure does. So let's jump into that interview with Joanna.
Hi, guys. It's me,
Frank the Ad Guy.
The customer journey is complex, but with Service Hub, HubSpot's all-in-one service and support platform, things can get a whole lot easier. From customer health scores to an AI-powered help desk, Service Hub makes it easier for you to support, strengthen, and grow your customer base. Learn more at hubspot.com/service. Putting on a webinar shouldn't require a master's in JavaScript. That's why we created Wistia Live. Wistia Live makes creating webinars a breeze. Customize the registration page, engage your audience with polls and live Q&A tools, then measure performance. You can even create clips for social with our AI tools. It's that easy. Learn more at wistia.com/live.
Joanna, so good to see you. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me here.
You know, this show is called Talking Too Loud because when I get excited, I cannot control the volume of my voice, something I've lived with my whole life. It's a huge problem and it's a huge opportunity. Problem. And so love to start the show by asking our guests what has them talking too loud. So what's got you talking too loud these days?
Oh, gosh, man. I mean, I've been thinking, given the topic here, you know, we were talking, there's so many things, so many things. I feel like everything I have an opinion on, and I was actually thinking about this, like I need to have fewer opinions. That kind of has me talking too loud, like stop talking so much, Joe. You don't need an opinion on that. But Chris, you emailed me with the fires that were going on here.
Yes.
In Kelowna. And what got me talking too loud was the freaking nonsense on Twitter about everything going on there and the polarization around wildfires. It's got my backup.
Can you tell our audience who doesn't know what happened and then, you know, just set the stage and then we can get into this?
Yeah. So here I live in Kelowna. Kelowna is beautiful. That's why you move here. And there are fires pretty regularly, but these were particularly bad fires. And so this is happening. And then, you know, you go on Twitter like an idiot to see what people are saying about this. Surely it's all going to be support and love. And it's like not a lot of weird thoughts and ideas. So since that time, I've been kind of got my back up about how something as obvious as like fires burning houses to the ground can be like politicized. I don't want this episode to be political, but like, when did it become a thing where you can have an opinion on a fire burning in front of you and whether it's like a legit problem or not? It's confusing to me.
Yeah. So basically, devastating wildfires, people losing their homes, smoke in the air, bad air quality. I mean, I emailed you because I was like, I know you and a couple other people who live there. I was worried about you all just checking in.
Yeah.
And that's what you would think.
Super nice.
That's what you would think people would be concerned about. And you're saying instead, it's even like a debate as to whether or not the wildfires are a problem or like who is responsible for them. Or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what it came down to, that it's not a problem because forests have fires. Like, duh. Like, yeah, we know that. Of course, forests have fires, but like these are not the same thing. And so it's just like disappointing, you know, and it's always this like minority. I get it. But what's going on?
Yeah. Why can't people just be compassionate?
Yeah. And just like, if you don't know what you're talking about, just shut the hell up for a while. Yeah. Just maybe try that for a while.
Yeah.
Try learning.
Yeah. I think the thing that it makes me think about is like, it's pretty amazing how much the algorithms and social media have changed everyone's perception of what's happening.
Yeah.
And so 100%. Like, you can look at your feed and almost 100% of people are on something where it, like in this example, it'd be like 100% of people being like, there's always forest fires. Why are these people freaking out? Like, they don't need more like aid to help them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like a tiny little niche, but there's enough people in that niche and they have a literally different worldview than everybody sitting next to them.
Yeah.
And this is on like every front. It's like unreal, right? Like even entertainment, education, how we spend our time, how we learn, like politics. It's the differences are so extreme. And so it's definitely not going away. So in a world like that, how do you write a message? How do you tell a story that actually stands out, that people connect with?
I mean, segue for the win there, Chris. Well done. But
We practice, you know?
Like, how do I get this girl to talk about coffee?
No.
Just kidding. No, it's fair and it's difficult. Like, I think that's part of the problem is obviously algorithms. We all know, like, what's up, that everything going on there that we don't understand, we don't know. We just know, like, something's amiss here. But how do you then get a message out that's legit and even... I think even believable, like even like breaking through today, given that it's so hard to believe anything, what do you do? That's kind of a thing that I think it's a good point to segue to that, because it does make our jobs very, very difficult when it's so hard to believe what people are saying online, unless it's truly like polarizing. And then somehow you do believe, like if it's neutral, maybe you're less likely to, I don't know, but how is it that I could share something that seems based in no sense of reality or science and somehow it still gets shared out and like people believe it? Do we even need to have an honest message, or like, can you say anything? And as long as you take a position, you'll build a following behind you. And if that's the case, that changes everything for how you message as a business in marketing.
It does seem like that's what's happening, right? Is like, if you don't take a position or you have a nuanced position, people are like, I don't have time for nuance.
No one wants instead, the nuance.
People want extremes. And there's like the line between like entertainment and education has like shifted where completely. It's like, oh, I assume I will be entertained. And yes, they're probably joking and I'll probably be able to figure out what percentage of the time they're joking and what percent of the time they're being genuine. Yeah. Just to really tie it into the other hot button, AI. We're having to get used to this world, I think, where you can't just believe what you see, right? Like you have to look and be like, well, this might not be true.
But then like, what are we supposed to do? As people, you can figure it out because you can just opt out if you're like, this is too annoying. But as businesses, I've tried opting out and like, not good. You're not like allowed to opt out. There's no alternative. There's no other.
It ends up hurting you. If you fully opt out, it hurts you, right? Like you're missing the opportunity. So yeah, I'd love if you could just kind of, we can dig into this from like the hard copywriting angle, but like how should people start as they think about this problem? Or like, how do you start as you think about this problem?
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, this is what we would do, right? We would start by listening to what the customers have to say. So existing customers, customers that you would most like to have. So if they're not the ones you already have, okay, well, what about your ideal prospects? What are they saying? You would take that voice of customer data and you would plug it into a framework, a copywriting framework. Problem, agitation, solution, desire, obstacle, solution, these sorts of like frameworks. And that is a really solid way to go about it. VOC, though, typically for a lot of businesses, VOC or voice of customer data comes from going out and listening to people with the understanding that they are talking honestly and believably about the real experiences. We know that when you do like review mining as a way to find voice of customer data, you're going to be sorting through some fake reviews. It's not all legit. That's fine. You know that going into it, you like take it with a grain of salt, triangulate your data. That's how you would
do it. That's how every podcast I go on and talk about conversion copywriting, every stage I get on, it's that. Do that. But that's assuming that, one, your inputs are based on something true and real, but two, that people need something true and real, and that the things that they're saying are, I guess, true and real, still to keep using that phrase. But if people just want to buy into something without any form of like nuance, then we kind of, I don't know, to me, it feels like we kind of get back into really old school copywriting. So much of the writing that we do today is like, it sounds good and like it flows, you know, it might be based on voice of customer, but you still go in there and you make it sound good. So a website looks like a website, a homepage looks like a homepage. Yeah. But what if like, that's not where we're going? What if you need an old school yellow highlighted, red bolded long form sales page? Because that's like kind of how the world is moving, right? Toward shout at me for a while and then I might believe you. But is that the world or is that just like the rare exception? But if you can get those people, that could still be 10% of the population of your market, which could still be major for your business. I'm stuck in this world right now. And how to communicate. You can't be polarizing, actually, as a brand. If you are, it has to be polarizing kind of with a sense of humor, like death water, right?
Liquid
called
death,
death water?
Yeah.
Liquid death. Liquid death. Liquid death. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I haven't bought it myself.
That has
I just
come
know
up
about
a
it.
Lot on the show.
I bet.
Liquid death. Yeah.
They're valued at like $1 billion or something ridiculous now for water in a can. I'm very impressed with what they've done here. But yeah, so that's taking a position as a brand. Like you're really pushing your brand really far. You might not be taking a position like we kill thirst. It's not a position necessarily, but you've done something that's so breakthrough that people who are really powered by our lizard brains today, more than ever, like your thinking brain is not to be discussed. Your thinking brain cares about
that
science
way
and
later.
Facts
yeah.
And
you're saying like, it seems like, especially you're getting dopamine hits all day scrolling, right?
All day.
Getting like thing after thing, living in your bubble. Like if you don't give them a dopamine hit also in your marketing, probably it's not going to work.
Yeah. I would say that. I mean, when I look at like examples of clients that we've worked with more recently, so lemon.io is this company that came to us. They help you find a developer, like an outsourced developer or a development team. And they came to us and they were like, obviously, this is a crowded market and it's hard to differentiate. But here, we would like you to write our copy so that we sound like a cult, like an actual cult. And we were like, a cult?
That's what they said?
Like, a cult. So we're like, okay, this could be fun. Yeah,
that's a weird aspiration.
That's
it's a little
cool
weird.
That they said that, though.
They did, And they had this like weird stuff going on with their iconography and everything. It was cool.
I gotta see this
so
website.
We did, and you would
did they implement everything?
Well, they've updated some things. This was two years ago that we wrote the original draft. So as you know, their business has changed a little bit. They're now targeting different things. Like they mentioned PLG now, which we didn't mention before. But yeah, it's like seek the light of lemon.io. All of these other like silly things, but you wouldn't believe the number of times Alexander is his name, their founder. He forwards me emails constantly that are like, dude, love your website. Love it. How do we do this? And he's like, I hope you're open to more business, which no, but it stands out, right? Like it's something, it is a bit of a dopamine hit, a little bit. It's doing something different for your brain.
Yeah, it is
it's different.
Most of us are scared of. Yeah. So I get that. This dopamine thing, but then how do brands actually do that today? I think is the tricky part to figure out. Cause, or do we all just like come up with some crazy thing to say, some bananas wild out there.
Very different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also wondering what you think about, like, it feels to me like almost, you know, there's all this research that everyone wants to research things before they buy, right? Like they research more and more and more every year before they buy. So by the time you're talking to them, they already know everything about you and they've looked at your reviews and they've done their research on the price and all this stuff. And so it's, you're dealing with them at a different moment. You have to market to them earlier. And I also wonder if it's like, do we need to market smaller things? Like smaller moments, smaller wins, because people are so busy. There's so many different things they're looking for. They're like, I'm not going to expect you. I don't want you to spend 3 months researching before you switch. I want to give you one discrete small thing that's going to help you now. And then once I do that, we'll have a direct connection that I can like tell you more and more things over time. So explicitly breaking up the process, trying to get in front of this basically and saying like, yeah, like an example for us is someone's like, how do I look good on my webcam? And it's like, all right, let's nail that specific thing.
Yeah.
And if we nail that specific thing and you're like, wow, that was delightful. Then they're like, what else do you do? Versus like waiting for them to say like, I want a platform that lets me edit and record and host my videos and, you know, ties my analytics into my map and blah, blah, blah. That's just like, so you don't know to even look for it, but you do know to look for your webcam, you know?
Yeah. Which is really interesting because I've been doing this research for a book, which is turning into 700 books now on money words, and bad words are part of money words. I talked about money words at Turing Fest. You didn't attend my talk. Don't worry about it, Chris. I'm not offended in any way. Pause.
I'm so sorry.
Just kidding. Just kidding. So in this like money called words out, and bad called words.
Out. Called out. That's pause Sylvie's favorite thing. Call them out. That's awesome. I'm so sorry.
I went
sorry.
To yours, but no big deal.
You did come to mine. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
But a bad word in this world of money words is and. The word and. And joins multiple ideas together and creates lists and means I'm shoving more at you to read instead of choosing, like you're saying, Chris, just tell me one thing. But so many, like when I look at the software companies that we work with in any way, so many of them are trying to go with we're the all-in-one. We do all those things now. And I get being a product that can do all of those things, but it's very, very tricky for marketers in particular to say, no, not and. Let's just focus, like you're saying, on one thing. And maybe that's just in, maybe it's not on our homepage, but at least in our social posts, in blog posts and other like authority building content, just the one thing. And, you know, studies would support that as like always having been important. It's always been like you want to avoid interference, and we tend to interfere with our own messages. So you'll say, I do this and this and this and this for you, when I really can only handle, I do this for you. That's all my brain has ever been able to handle. But we've been shoving all of these messages at people and it hasn't been working. So maybe it's a good turn of events that people are proving right now that they just need one quick hit. That's it.
Yeah. I also am realizing as we start to get deeper down this, I want to zoom back out for one sec.
Oh yeah.
And I just want to set the stage. Can you just talk about what is conversion-based copywriting in general? Like, what do you do?
Yes.
We'll do that midway through the episode. Here we go.
Yeah, that's usually where we start. But so conversion copywriting is, I've been doing this for 20 years. I started out as a creative writer. That was on my business card. There were business cards in my first job. I was a creative writer, and that meant you just write things and make it sound good. And then I got hired at Intuit, tech company, to be their copywriter for the global business division. That's when I started to get involved in A/B testing and all of the things that come with conversion rate optimization and performance marketing and things like that. And with that, I started to see like, oh, wait. So most people look at copywriting as you make things sound good. Just make it sound good. I would have some marketers would say, one said in particular, here's some copy, go fluff it up. I was like, what the hell does that mean? What are you talking about? So it would get me mad that I was talking too loud a lot at the time about this ridiculous concept that all you do is put words on the page and then you somehow get results. Like, there's a lot of disconnect between words on the page and getting results. Like, connect them for me, please. Make that happen. Shorten that path. And so then I started studying direct response copywriting, the really old school stuff, John Caples, Gene Schwartz, all of the old timey ones that really tested and knew what they were doing in talking to one person in days before design was a big deal. Still when like copy led your ad, it was copy first kind of world. And it'd get really good results. So we started taking that. I called it conversion-focused copywriting until I got really lazy about it and didn't want to keep writing out focused and just stopped saying that part, and then called it conversion copywriting, where the idea is that the words that you put on the page should move people to say yes. So you need to have an offer for the person you are trying to turn into your customer. And then you need to think about how to message that offer in such a way that they buy in, they want it. That's conversion copy. Awesome. It might not always sound good. Sometimes teams don't like the way it sounds in the end, but it performs. Yeah.
Okay. And then, so I missed your talk in Scotland.
I'll forgive you.
Can you talk to us about magic words?
Money words, you son of
money words. Sorry, money words. See, I missed it.
Priorities, Chris.
I usually think about sleight of hand magic a lot. So, you know, it's just a slip of the tongue, cool. You know?
Okay. So yeah. So the idea with money words is once we're through, so conversion copy is list offer copy. You guys.
I'm still laughing at him saying that he thinks about magic a lot, but
Money words.
No, all good. I love it. List offer copy is where we start with conversion copywriting. Copy is the least important of those three things. But when it's time to work on copy, it's important to think about the right words to use on the page, because conversion copy is like, yes, you can use words to convert people. However, you can also use words that totally turn people away or that make everything worse for them, and suddenly you are definitely not the option for them. So money words are things like you. You is a money word. It performs consistently well in split tests, in other ways of validating if a message is working. So lead with the word you. And basically, anytime you see the word we or your brand name on the page, think of it as like a portal to hell. Like it opens the gates. It opens, bats come flying out when the word we appears on the page. It's a way to like let BS run the show, right? Because you're talking about yourself, not about them. So you is a money word, but then there are the bad words as well, the anti-money words. And I wrote an article on First Round Review. It just came out a month ago, maybe, on these exact things. So where and is a bad word because it's going to combine too many messages, making it hard for me to say yes. And away I go. I just ignore you from this point on, or at least until you come back to me with one message that I could probably handle. Yeah. So that's what we're talking about with like money words. The actual words that you use, are you using the right ones? And this goes to like studies. I mean, the studies that have been done on word choice that none of us in marketing are paying any attention to. So there was a study done years ago in Massachusetts, I think, on what people would give the thumbs up to for insurance. So basically people were asked, hey, here, there's this one. Would you support insurance covering this thing? And they presented three different options. It was infertility disease, infertility disability, or infertility condition. Out of those, which one do you think got the most thumbs up that we should support insurance covering the costs for that? Disease, disability, or condition?
Condition.
Disease.
Yeah. Disease gotcha. Was number gotcha, one, zombie. Then disability, then condition. But like,
because condition massively. Was too ambiguous.
Yeah, I think, and that's what everybody calls it though. That's like when you're going through medical everything. You can go through Harvard's website or whatever it was for infertility and it's condition. It's never disease. It's never disability. And so shockingly, a lot of states, I think it's 48 states, don't have support, financial support for people who are going through infertility disease. So it's one of those things like none of us know that, right? None of us know that that's a word that could actually cost you $20,000 per IVF round that you do. And the average person or couple does 8 rounds of IVF. That's $160,000 later that you have invested because the word disease isn't used when talking about this thing that you're going through. So if that's true for healthcare, where there are a lot of people who could use that knowledge. Well, how many things are we missing out in marketing where we're just like randomly throwing words down that sound good, but in fact are actually working against people moving forward with saying yes really can come down to just word choice, getting people to take that action that you want them to, even though it seems like, how important could it be? It's like, it's actually hugely important, the things that we're just guessing at and like walking away from. Those are money words.
Yeah. Those are money words. Yeah. Wow. And, you know, as you're talking about that, I'm just thinking about how many pages we have on the website, how many things we have to manage, like, you know, new people joining all the time. Like, it's hard to actually implement this on every front, I think.
Yeah. How do you move through that implementation process?
You know, I wish marketing ran more like product, because product has rules for things, right? Like you wouldn't just release things without them being at least, you know, I know we do copy reviews and stuff like that, but there's so much that goes into building a product. And there's not nearly as much, in my experience, that goes into like building a customer, like how, which I think marketing is responsible for. You're supposed to create customers out of people wandering around. You just have to like now make them into a customer. But we just don't. We don't. And there, I think it's completely fair to say, well, but new people come on board and all of these things happen. And it's like, well, you can have, you know, a message map. But the more we try to like control these things, the worse they typically perform. You could have a message map with like, here's our key message and here's how to say it. It would inevitably come down to here's how to say it. I can't tell you the number of times I was like, we can't keep reusing this headline for when I was still in house. But it's like, well, that's what's on the message map, so use it. Like, well, it doesn't work here. It's just not working. But like, especially if you have to say things in more interesting ways, then you need to have an empowered team that gets the foundations of copywriting, conversion copywriting, direct response, how to build a customer. And everybody has to be on board with it, have the same playbook, but also be empowered to write a different thing in that moment for what the audience needs right now, which is different from building a product. So I get that it's not the same, but wouldn't it be nicer if we could find a way to apply as the same rigor and resources to marketing as we do to building a product or updating it or building a new feature for it or whatever that thing might be? We just don't. And then you end up running a whole bunch of A/B tests, or you're like, forget it, A/B tests don't work. Like, we never implement what we learn anyway. So just throw stuff up there. And then again, wonder why it's still converting at 2% on a good day. It's not a message of hope. I apologize.
But it's real talk. It's real talk. Yeah.
No, but I think it's like kind of like getting in shape, right? Like, you know what you're supposed to do, but actually doing it's hard. It's like, and I think what you're saying is like, you want to do this right? Like, you got to use the right words. You got to make it about them, not about you. You need to speak to the pain. You got to be willing to educate them over time. You need to like think about copy that actually converts, which is going to take a lot of work. Yeah. I think it's also confusing sometimes to folks when it's like something that is on a page that's a very well-worn page. Lots of people are going to see it. You know, it has a one specific job to do versus like a wild campaign that like might have a very different intention. And that like a big broad in-person or out of home campaign, like the copy obviously matters, but it's trying to do a very different thing than like, you know, the button on the page where you sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fair. But I do think that part of the place where people get stuck, and what I wish was the case, is like, you know, you build one product, even if there are offshoots of it. You build the product, the core product. Loom is Loom. There's stuff that comes off Loom. Wistia is Wistia. There's other things, right? But it's, you've got the core product. There's really, it's very hard to get marketers and really the whole organization on board with like, let's just build one customer first. Let's just like, just one. Let's get really, really good at this one. Because otherwise we start talking about, well, this campaign is for this group. And just like
being really specific about the target customer.
Yeah. Just choose one. Make one actually happy to say yes to you in a certain period of time. And I know we're always trying to do this, but it's so soft and it's so lacking in, like, again, rigor, any sort of real like system process. Like, here's how to actually do it and know that you've done it. And it just ends up kind of falling apart into, hey, we had this ad perform really well. That must mean that our audience loves this message. So we should plaster that message everywhere, which is, in my experience, it is not as productive as having a better strategy out of the gate on who we're really going to turn into a customer for the next year, as long as it takes to build that customer. And then once you've got that customer, which is one standing in for many, right? Many people look like this customer. Then we move on. That's typically not what marketers do, not what teams do.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard for people to be long-term, you know? Like, that's, it's like,
but you have to be with product, right?
Like, you have to be with product, but it's like on the marketing side, it's like, well, but can we really think about what's going to happen in the second or third quarter or like next year? And so people are like, I just have to do what I think is going to work right now. And then everyone does the same stuff and they don't, you know, we're back to the beginning of the conversation. They're searching for that one thing that's going to go viral versus like all the points that a customer could ever interact with you that are not viral, that like, actually, if you move the needle on those, it's going to add up and have a real impact.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, so we've been talking internally about speaking to the emotional needs of the customer. Mm. And instead of just saying like, this is what this is and it's for you, really talking about like marketing the pain and the solution. Mm. And I feel like it's an interesting thing because when you really speak to the pain, it might actually resonate with more people than your target customer.
Yeah.
And it seems like a really big unlock for that reason.
Yeah.
But I think it's also like hard for people to totally wrap their minds around what that means. But can you just talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. And it's the hardest thing to commit to also as a marketer, because it can be a little bit scary to talk about a pain or a problem. But if you're going to sell a solution, there's got to be a problem that it's solving. Marketers, in my experience, they don't like to put it on the page. They don't like to say, here's your problem, because they feel like, I know in my experience, there's this sense of like, you're fear mongering now. Yeah. Like, just because you mentioned the problem they're experiencing, that's what's going on. Yeah, now you're like a bad marketer. You're not elegant enough. It's too noticeable. And then people come in and with the whole good design, you don't notice good design. And so shouldn't you not notice good copy? And this copy made me feel something and I paid attention to it. And we had all these people replied to the email that we sent and said they had things to say. Like, I know we did very emotion and problem-based emails for Doodle, the calendaring solution years ago. And one email in particular, I think we got 30 times the support tickets out of it. People just hit reply and commented things. Like, they were sending back their notes. Some were like, this is dumb, don't send me this ever again. And others were engaging. Others were interacting. The support team was like, end this, stop sending this email. But it also raised conversions. Like, a healthy amount of paying customers came out of it. So the CMO was like, no, we're running it. We're running it. God bless them for doing that. But it's tricky. It's scary. So what we have seen is, yes, problems. When you lead with the problem, that's the real felt problem that your target customer is going through. That's where magic happens. So a good example I bring this one up a lot because we've published it and you can go find a blog post on it to read the whole thing, is for this e-commerce company called Sweatblock. Sweatblock helps people with hyperhidrosis. So not just like, so you sweat a lot, like you're sweating in your arms and backs of your knees and like sweat's pouring off you.
Like Steve Ballmer at the developers conference.
Yes. Yeah. Sadly, yes, he could have used Sweatblock. Yeah. So you're sweating in this, like, it's aggressive. It's a lot. So it's a real solution to a real problem. And most solutions are solutions in some way to real problems. So put aside anybody who's listening going like, well, ours isn't really a problem. Maybe it's more of a vitamin or something. Just like, stop. Just like, okay, fine. In this case.
Is this a vitamin? Sorry, I didn't heard that voice a little bit. I had to do that.
Don't you use that voice?
Yeah.
Problem agitation solution. We rewrote their homepage to go open with the problem, agitate it. That's the tricky part. And then get into the solutions they've tried and then your solution. So the problem that we opened with came from voice of customer data. It doesn't even have to be hot out. My armpits are always wet. First person headline in quotation marks, followed by all of these agitation points. So what are the things that might happen when you're sweating uncontrollably? Like, what are some problems you'd experience? You can't confidently high five at an event. Oh, yeah. You can't raise your hand in a classroom to ask a question. Right? You can't stand at the front of the room and present.
Oh man, I feel for these sweaters.
I'm feeling for them.
This is too real for her.
It's too real. Yeah. I'm feeling a lot of pain for them.
Don't sweat it. It's just kidding. Sorry. I know. No, these all came from voice of customer, right? Like these are real lived experiences. That was the stuff. That's always the stuff that gets cut. That's the part where you're like, cool, in the first draft and everybody is on board. This is working. This is so great. And then everybody gives it the weekend and they come back and it's Monday or Tuesday and they're going into the Google Doc now and they're editing out that part. Like, I don't think we need that. People will get it.
Is that out of fear? Why is that?
I think I do think it's fear. I don't want to say lack of courage because I'm sure they have courage around their messaging, but it is. It's, I'm afraid to make people feel something. Can't they just remember it by themselves? People don't want to remember their pain. People do not go to your website hoping that, like, they're not sitting there thinking, oh, I have this major pain and here's how it's lived in my life. And here's, they might go there sometimes in the moment when it just happened, but particularly for software.
They're trying to ignore the pain. Right.
They're mostly trying to ignore it. Yes.
Yeah.
So our job is to agitate it. Yeah.
What does the agitation do? Like, what's the benefit of agitation?
Yeah, to make them feel it. So I might go there. I might land on this site. I know what Sweatblock is. I'm not surfing the web. I'm not like, I know what I've landed here for, right? It's to help me with my hyperhidrosis. Okay, fine. So you might think as a marketer, well, they already know. So that's why they got here. It's okay. We don't have to tell them anything. They already know. Just show them the product. They'll buy it. And if you show them a discount or that it's bundled, that's even better, which is like pump the brakes. That works. Like, good. That's good. But it's too soon for it. If we just said it doesn't even have to be hot out, my armpits are always wet, and then we jumped to buy now, we tested it wasn't as good as adding those agitation points. That's where we get people nodding along. That's where you actually do see copy act like a real salesperson. Like, we say copy is your online salesperson, but like, people still just like write whatever the hell they feel like anyway and wonder why it's not selling. This is a moment where they're nodding along with you, going like, yep, that was me. That was me. That might not be me, but poor guy who had to deal with that. And that one's me, et cetera. So this is where they're nodding. And then if you can just keep them nodding, it's like, it's not tricky. Just do that thing. And then by the end, they've been nodding with you so long, you'd have to pull back away from the momentum of saying yes. They're already on their path to saying yes now. You can just like close them. But people edit that part out again because, yeah, it makes them feel weird.
Okay, so I should have asked this earlier, which is, you know, you're talking about this thing that clients do that basically water down the work. They make the work less likely to work, right? Mm. Removing agitations is an example. What other things do people do that is making their copy less effective that you see across your client base?
Leading with design and then asking copy to just fit in there. So here's our template, especially for email. Here's our template. We're going to have an opening image like this, and then you've got these two lines. And then we're going to have another button, and then we're going to have a video embedded below. And I'm like, what do I do with two lines? Like, what am I supposed to do with two lines? So I can't work with you now. So letting design go first. Copy and art worked together in old school agencies. They were the creative team. And I think that's part of the problem. You hand a copy doc over to a designer, and this is often copywriters getting in the way. Copy gets approved, and then it kind of gets thrown over the fence to the designer, who you should have been working with the whole time. And the designer goes, this is too long. But the designer wasn't included in most of the conversations, and the designer hasn't been trained on conversion copywriting. And so they go around cutting it. And I've had hard conversations with clients who are like, Joe, we implemented your copy, and it's not not getting results. And I'm like, hang tight. You did not implement my copy. And then we have to go through it and see, like, where did this whole section go? You can't just willy-nilly pull stuff out because it's not working with the design. You have to work harder on that thing. So editing out good stuff because it doesn't work in the design goes a long way. And ultimately, then there's also just letting the room vote on what they like. Having feedback that says, I like that. Oh, I really like that. You shouldn't. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Actually, if you don't like it, it might be more likely to convert. It might be saying something. Yeah.
Oh boy, that's good. You're hitting in there.
Hot buttons. Hot buttons.
Hot buttons. Oh no.
These people think that they're gonna vote on what they like. No, that's not how this works.
That's not okay. Not in my world.
No. So I want to transition to rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
I have five questions for you.
Damn.
This rapid fire section is gonna be about email etiquette.
Oh.
Up first. What are the worst email openers?
Hi. That's my answer.
Okay.
Hi. The worst is hi. Never first name. Hi. Hi first name and then like a dash or comma. Out of the gate. You're selling me something. No, it's not happening. No. My coworkers okay. don't say that. Hi first name, comma, enter. Okay, I'm going to stop talking.
No, that's good. That was good.
Oh, you're that's actually damn. I got to rethink my whole email outreach.
Yeah, Sylvie's got a big problem. Okay,
up next. I do a lot of hi.
What's the best email closers?
Best email closers?
Like best way to close an email.
Oh, okay. I thought it meant like to convert them. I'm like, don't try in the email. Well, not really. You know, it depends, sadly. I have seen that the best emails are those that most closely mimic a real one-to-one email. It has to look like it's coming from somebody that you know. So the closer is like your shortened signature with your actual email signature below it. Yeah. Just close with your name.
Make it look normal.
Yeah. It shouldn't look like marketing or it's going to feel like marketing.
Okay. What are three words that you would always avoid putting in a subject line?
The problem is, if you have more than three words, you're probably too long with your subject line in the first place. So I'm like, cut everything other than three words. But what should you not put in there? Re, if it's not an actual re. Definitely not forward, if it's not real.
That's great.
All. That's all great. I think.
Keep it short. Make it real. This is a theme we're seeing here.
Yes.
Are you a yay or nay on emojis?
In subject lines or anywhere?
Anywhere.
In subject lines. I'm curious.
I'm yay.
Cool.
Which Silly? Emoji would you suggest?
Not the celebration emoji. That one is so overused. I feel like it's okay. too like my aunt uses it and so it can't be used anymore.
Okay. Final rapid fire question. What is the favorite email that you've received from a B2B brand in the last month or two and why?
Got swipes for this, man. B2B. Oh, shoot. There's this like...
It could be B2C. Company.
Okay. So my favorite email or subject line, did you say, Chris?
Email.
My favorite email, I will go B2C if you're cool with that because
yeah, it
stands
go for
out
it.
To me. It's HIUT is the name of the brand. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hewitt? I don't know. Hewitt? I don't know. But they do denim. They do jeans. And they send out emails that walk you through the latest denim that they've brought in. Like they talk about the fabric itself. Mm. And they show you it and where it was made and what makes it so cool and how many pairs they're going to be able to make out of this. But they don't do it. It's long form, but they really lean in. Like they have big gaps between their sentences. Like they're asking you to scroll and they're like, depending on people who like this denim will scroll. So that's like, it's cool. They're doing cool stuff for like a small shop that sells jeans.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Joanna, thank you so much. This has been really great. It's been so fun. Where's the best place for people to connect with you, to learn more, to follow you? Where should they go?
Yeah. So we have lots of free training on conversion copywriting over at copyhackers.com. I have a newsletter on money words on Substack called Joe and Co. So that's a good place to just like learn about what word you should not be using or you should use more of.
Amazing. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been fun.
It's me again,
Frank the Ad Guy.
And this month's podcast shout out goes out to Success Story. Hosted by Scott D. Clary, the show dives into the playbooks, mindsets, and success stories from some of the top business leaders. Check it out at HubSpot.com/podcast network or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, back to talking too loud.
Well, you know, we start heady. We get into the very, very tactical in there copy advice. I like these episodes when we go through such a breadth of things.
Yeah. When we started, I was like, how are we going to get to copy? And you blew me away with your segue.
Hats off to you. Thank you.
I think what's cool about how we started this episode is that like so many people, so many businesses are facing that same challenge of like, what message is going to get resonance in today's climate? Do people want something polarizing? Can you convey nuance? Can you believe the data that you're like getting from customers? It's kind of the thing that we're all contending with.
It's confusing. I think it's more confusing than it's been in a long time. And obviously, we're all still human beings. And so like a lot of these basic things should work. The lizard brain and the rational brain, all these different things, like tapping into those things should work. But when we're programming ourselves through how we consume content a very different way, it stands to reason that the messages that we put out there, how people buy, is going to keep evolving and it's going to keep changing. And so it's like a very interesting topic because it's so in the now and things are changing so much. And you know, I couldn't help but thinking through this also is like the implications on AI. So like, you know, if you have AI that's trained on the past and you need to do a very different thing for the future, how will it do it? This stuff is hard because you need human beings ultimately taking bets and guesses and understanding.
Yeah.
It's like the art part, right? It's basically what it seems to me is that the art part of marketing is becoming more important. Mm-hmm. And that is like really exciting if you like to do really creative work. And it's really exciting if you like to take those types of risks and if you trust your instincts. But if you don't, it's going to get harder and harder and harder, I think.
That's really true.
This will be good stuff to think about, Sylvie. You know?
Yeah, I'm heavily taking
it
in.
Literally sitting here.
No, I'm like sighing. Yes, like, yeah. Well, just, I mean, I write, you know, creatively. I do B2B copywriting as well. It's just, it makes you think a lot about words and how you convey an idea and how you, I'm yammering, but I'm lost in the sauce in a good way.
You're in there. You're deep. Well, if you're still with us and you're lost in the sauce, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to it. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. First episode, subscribe. Join the fun. Join the party. And of course, you can always email us at ttlpod@wisia.com. Thank you so much. Lots more great episodes coming soon.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage. Produced by me, Sylvie Lubow, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.